Welcome to the Negotiations Ninja podcast, where we develop and deliver the most engaging negotiation content and training in the world. We host negotiation experts, business people, and entrepreneurs, and discuss what works, what doesn't work, and how we can improve our negotiation skills. Listeners, welcome. You've got Mark here. This is the Negotiations Ninja podcast. We've got MVK on the show today. That's what everyone calls him because everyone screws up his name, including me, Michael Van Keulen. He is the Chief Procurement Officer at Coupa, previously Chief Procurement Officer at Lululemon and others, and he's seen the inside. He's seen the inside of both worlds. He's been on the industry side, as we call it, the killing fields, and he's been on the inside of procurement tech. We have a fascinating discussion. This is for all my procurement nerds out there, my data nerds. This one's for you. I think you're going to love this episode. Thank you so much for being here. Enjoy. Michael, we made it, man. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm stoked. I am absolutely thrilled that we were able to finally get you on the show. I know you're a busy guy. We've been, you know, throwing back and forth schedules for a long time, and we finally made it happen, man.
Yeah, work from home, man. Work from home is changing the game, right? We're all on Zooms back to back to back, and we start earlier in the day and we finish later in the day. But yeah, I'm excited to talk to you, Mark. It's always great to talk to you. I love your perspective on procurement and the profession. So it's always a pleasure to be here.
Thanks, dude. You know, it's funny you mentioned the work from home thing. I had a guest on the other day that said, listen, I'm not sure if I work from home or if I live at work. The two have blended so much now that it's hard to tell the difference. Let's get into the discussion, man. The reason I wanted to have you on is because I respect what you've done in the industry. And now with the way that you've transitioned your career, you've basically seen everything, which I think is super, super interesting. Before we get into it, let's tell the listeners who you are and what you do.
Totally. And thank you for that comment. I'm not sure how I can match that. Now, I've been in procurement and finance for a little over 20 years. I was born and raised in Amsterdam. Real quick, people refer to me as MVK because of my last name. But I've been in finance and procurement for 25 years or so. Background is finance. Started to get really passionate and excited about procurement. My time at Foot Locker, where, this is 15 years ago or so, where we were one of the early adopters of e-sourcing, a company called Iasta. For those of us who've been in this profession long enough, they will all remember Iasta. For reverse auctions and sourcing events, got really excited about procurement and realized that, hey, you know what? This finance thing is fun, but debits and credits are only as excited as it can be. And procurement really driving difference and meaningful impact to strategy and bottom line and value. And then I got really excited about the profession. And that got me to VF Corp, Fortune 300, to the parent company for North Face and Timberland, Vans, Lee Wrangler at the time, and a bunch of other brands, where originally in finance and then set up the procurement function in Europe, which was really, really fun to do. And it got some attention from the corporate office. I was asked to lead a global transformation for VF, which was, very humbling, fun, exciting, interesting experience to do that for a company of that scale. Did that for a while and then joined Lululemon 5 years ago or so to do the same thing, set up the procurement function. Company at the time, $2 billion in sales, no procurement, no practices, no governance, no nothing. And built that infrastructure together with a bunch of people, right? It's never just me. Has been really, really fun, and bring that company to the modern era, implement Coupa. Lulu and VF are both Coupa customers. And then was given the opportunity to join the other side and, be the head of procurement at a procurement company. And so I joined Coupa 7 months ago now, and right as the pandemic hit, and it's been an incredible journey so far. So I've been very blessed, and it's been a great run so far.
Yeah, man. What an amazing career. So now you've seen the outside, right? You've been in industry. You know what it's like to be a procurement leader out in the killing fields. And now on the inside, you're seeing the inside of a procurement tech company as well, and one of the biggest. And the way I want this discussion to work is because there's not a lot of us that get to see both worlds, right? We don't get to see what happens on the outside and what happens on the inside. And I want to draw a comparison to the two. So maybe the first question I'll ask you is, what are some of the biggest similarities between what you see in industry and what you've seen now at Coupa?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. And first of all, I love how you refer to it as killing field. I certainly have I have a few scars along the way, so I can certainly attest to that. I think the similarities are, you know, procurement is a methodical approach. I call it seven steps, and some people might refer to it as five or four, but it's a seven-step process in my brain where it starts with identifying the requirements and the needs of the business, whatever they might be, setting some sort of baseline, then scoping out the market and figuring out like, hey, who are the supplier or suppliers that can satisfy whatever those requirements are. You run a competitive event, you go into contracting, and then once that contract has gone through the right channels, you go ahead and execute against the contract, and you start monitoring the performance of that supplier. I mean, it's a seven-step process. And what I've at least learned in my 7 months here at Coupa is that, you know, whether you're in retail, whether in technology, whether you're in FMCG or you're in, it doesn't really matter which industry you're in, the pharma industry, that procurement process is very, very similar. And it can all be digitized and it can all be enabled and empowered by the power of technology. And I think that's my biggest learning, is that it is very, very similar and that it really cuts across industries and that procurement is a transferable knowledge. And I've always kind of believed that, but I can actually now attest to the fact that that's really, really true.
And one of the things that you've been great at throughout your career is really implementing digitization, implementing automation and process, and making sure that everything is as automated as it can be to a certain degree, and then working on the latent factors later on. Why is it, do you think, that so many people, especially in procurement leaders that I see, there seems to be such a big resistance to digital transformation? Where do you think that stems from?
That could take us an hour just to take I think it's a combination of a few different things. You know, I have said digitization is ready for procurement, but procurement is not always ready for digitization. Mm. It's kind of what you're saying. And I think it's for a couple different reasons. One, it's the maturity level of the profession. I think across our industries, some industries may be exceptionally, like maybe the automotive industry is fairly mature from a procurement standpoint. Most industries are still fairly immature. And so the CIO and the CFO have a much bigger seat at the table than the CPO does. And as a result of that, it requires procurement to really step up and make the case and the business case, right? Because ultimately there is investment involved, and stand behind that in a very powerful way and be willing to, at some degree, say, you know what, I'm willing to put my career on the line and I'm really going to drive all the value that I'm articulating here. And in order to do that, you need to give me the platform and the solution that I really need. What you often see happening is that IT takes over that conversation and turns it into an IT conversation. And so they forget that, hey, at the end of the day, IT is there to support the business as much as procurement is. And they turn it into an IT conversation rather than a, hey, what's the best solution for the business? And then often the CPO, you know, has a hard time to sell that story and to demonstrate where the ROI is. And we then often go back to what we used to do, which is, well, we got an ERP. I can run some kind of analytics out of that. And then I'll use my own taxonomy to kind of classify spend either in Excel or use some spend analytics engine to help classify my spend. And I become rear view mirror procurement rather than forward facing and forward looking procurement. But I think the key to my answer here is, and I know it's a little bit of a long answer, is that it's about the positioning of procurement and the ability to properly articulate what the value is that digitization brings to the table.
Yeah, I agree with you. There's a lot of teams right now that are being dragged, and a lot of leaders that are being dragged kicking and screaming into the future because of what's happened, obviously, totally, with the pandemic, right? Like, I mean, there, you've got no choice. Like, you have to start implementing digitization and really implement a full digital transformation within your entire procurement process, within your entire procurement team. And so when people are doing that and they're trying to position that internally, now it's becoming easier because of obviously what's happened. Where do you think people should start that journey? Because when people look at the whole process, it can sometimes seem very overwhelming. So where do you think a good procurement leader should start with that digital transformation journey?
Yeah, great question. That answer can be fairly short. I call it partnership or create allies. Because think about it, right? I start to lead a digitization journey and I do this in my own silo, it will never end well. Because the implications for, there are many different stakeholders in this process. So what I would encourage any practitioner to do as they think about the digitization and the journey is engage with the right stakeholders. And those right stakeholders are not very difficult. The first one is finance, because I'm going to automate AP. And that actually is going to have pretty big downstream ramifications around my procure-to-pay process. And the way I do that today, whether that is paper-based, whether I have some sort of scanning engine, some OCR that helps me, you know, paper flow, AP will say, well, we have automated our downstream, and so why are we digitizing it? So your finance team is very, very crucial. They also, by the way, need to sign off on your business case. So, you know, I highly encourage that. The second group that you really want to have a strong partnership with is IT, right? I just articulated the challenge of the digitization journey, especially if you've got IT leaders who believe that this is an IT conversation and that they should be in the driving seat. And, you know, I can attest to both at Lulu and VF, procurement was driving the digitization conversation and not IT. But that's also because I had forward-thinking IT leaders there. So it's not just having the procurement foresight, but also having the ability to get your IT leadership behind the digitization journey. So that's the second audience that you really need to resonate well, really, really well, and clearly articulate why this is so important for the organization. And then the third group is legal, right? There is CLM, there is contract lifecycle management in your digitization journey. And whether which platform you choose, I will leave that up to the audience to run a proper process. That's really crucial. But let's not forget the most important group. It's the business. Ultimately, upstream, you can have the best platform in the planet, but if nobody adopts it, then who cares? Your ROI is going to go down the tube. Yeah. And when I talk about adoption, then even there, companies do make the mistake to think, oh, just as long as my end user adopts the technology, I'll be fine. But in order to do business, there needs to be a second part, and that is your supplier. So ensure that there is adoption, not just from the users, which is important. It has to be intuitive. You know, we'd like to refer to it as the best UI is no UI. Think about that. Put your users in front of the platform or platforms you're picking, and then think about your suppliers. Are they going to accept whatever platform you're putting into place? If they don't, again, it doesn't matter. And people will look for ways to go around the system. So I highly encourage everybody to have those stakeholders with you. If you do that, I guarantee you that you'll get a lot of support for your story, and it'll make your change management so much easier as well.
I think so many people, when they go on this kind of journey, they really leave out what I consider to be the most important part, which is what you mentioned is adoption and utilization. Like once they start adopting, like how do you increase utilization? So do you have a success team that helps to train and ramp up utilization of the tool? Because if they're not utilizing the tool to its full entirety, you're just not going to get the ROI that you would have expected when you first sold the business case to begin with, right? So in order to realize that ROI, you have to have a really good adoption and utilization plan in place. Hey, listeners, I want to tell you about another company that I run called Content Callout. It is a thought leadership brand marketing company. Now, what does that mean? It means that we take you as an executive or entrepreneur, a leader of a small or medium-sized business, and we turn you into a thought leader online. We take your personal brand and we amp it up to 11. So that you can lead with confidence, knowing that people will recognize you, recognize your brand, and recognize your business because of the thought leadership approach that you've taken on social media through content creation and content distribution, as well as engaging with all of your following online. How do you get involved in this? Easy, easy, easy. Just go to contentcallout.com/get-started, and you will see there three different options that will allow you to take your thought leadership brand for yourself and for your business to the next level. We are super excited to talk to you about this. We've seen some massive growth with the businesses that we've been working with. Very, very exciting time for us. Look at that. We appreciate it. Now back to your show. Now, you've seen both sides. What should we as procurement leaders be asking our technology partners, whether we're implementing a P2P platform or whether we're implementing another kind of technology in procurement? What kind of questions should we be asking that aren't being asked right now? Like when we think of all the procurement leaders in the world, they're missing some key crucial questions that they should be asking. What do you think they should be asking that they're not asking?
I just want to make sure I understand the question correctly. You're saying what should procurement leaders ask their IT organization that they're not
asking? No, their implementation. So when we're thinking of the P2P software itself, if I was going to implement an Ariba or a Coupa or something like that, what should I be asking my software, my P2P provider that I'm not asking right now?
Interesting question. I think there's a few things that you need to ask. I think the first thing is adoption. How is your platform, whichever one you pick? Obviously, I work for Coupa, but let's leave that aside for a second. How are you going to ensure that I am going to drive 90% up spend adoption? How are you going to do that for me? Now, of course, it takes two to tango, but if you have the right solution, like the solution partner out there, and don't think of this as like a piece of software, it's way more than that. So how are you going to drive adoption? That's the one thing. The second thing that I would highly encourage everybody to look at is the power of data. The amount of data that is being gathered today in our community, if I do want to talk about the Coupa community for just a second, the power of data and the value that you can extract out of community data is incredible. And the prescriptiveness of that data that you get out of our platform and anyone else that you pick, but it's incredible. Like if I have the ability to, at real time, benchmark my performance against best in class, like I'm not talking about a Gartner magic quadrant or some kind of Hackett, whatever. I'm really talking about real data, actual real life data. And I have the ability to drive more value out of my spend by benchmarking that. The opportunities are endless. If you then add to that what the future roadmap is, that's the third thing I would encourage everybody to ask. Future roadmap, where are we taking our platform? Whether it's Coupa or any of the other ones that you mentioned, and I'm certainly not bashing our competition, but what's the future journey? Where are you taking this thing? And I think if you ask those three questions, because this is not I'm buying something for 12 months and let me go do this again 12 months from now. No, you're going to be with this thing for a long time. And so it's not just important what you're buying today. It's also, where is this platform going? What's the future direction? 3 years out, 5 years out? Have you thought about that? Show me your development plan. And I think if you do those three things, so again, to recap it, it's the adoption level, both on the buy, on the supplier side, and on the internal business stakeholder side. It's community and community intelligence. And then it's the vision for your platform. You want end-to-end. You don't want to have point solution for risk or for pay, for virtual payments or treasury now, right? You want an end-to-end solution that's going to manage your entire ecosystem. And what's the future direction of your platform? I think those are the three fundamental questions you need to ask. And if any of those three don't give you a warm and fuzzy feeling, please don't do it.
Yeah, I love that. I want to dwell on the future piece because here's where I think sort of separates the wheat from the chaff, so to speak, because there's so much going, this industry especially, this discipline, procurement discipline, is moving so fast in terms of technology implementation right now and what's being developed that for a lot of people that are already like 15 years behind can seem sort of a bit crazy when they think about the implications of AI and predictive analytics and all that kind of stuff. So let's talk about where you see procurement tech going in the future. How fast do you see the implementation of AI being implemented? And at what point are we going to eventually say, look, we no longer need tactical procurement because everything's been automated?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And we already apply AI in our day-to-day lives, right? I mean, if you use any kind of app on your phone today to get you from point A to point B, that is all driven by AI and the power of community and community intelligence. What's the fastest way to get me? I live in Vancouver, to go from North Vancouver, where I live, to downtown. And by utilizing Google or whatever I use to get there, it's the power of AI. I mean, we use it in our day-to-day lives. If you look at our platform, we use it in our platform every single day. We have the data, and by benchmarking that data and allowing that to be accessible in a community environment, and I can actually now, like, you know, almost like have the platform tell me where I have risk, where I have opportunity to get better, to be faster, to have my PO cycle times go faster, or my electronic invoicing, or whatever might be relevant for your organization. We use AI today. And I think that's only going to accelerate over the next couple of years, because in order for AI to work, you need a bunch of data. And now if you put on the layer of RPA, where you can now teach somebody to do something and that somebody being a robot. I mean, that's the easiest way for me to kind of wrap my head around this thing, you know, where the more tactical, to your point, Mark, tactical, the more basic procurement work. And that's where I think our industry is going as a profession, frankly. That is all at some point going to be driven by technology, RPA. I mean, it can already, you know, be done today, right? If you get a couple of bots and you just teach that bot to do something, they will get better and better and better, and they can do it faster and faster, and they will do it much better and with better outcomes than we can. But then the question is, okay, well, what's procurement going to do, right? Do we still have a future? And I say, absolutely, we do. I think procurement as a profession over the past 6 months with COVID, I mean, we only got accelerated, right? We did what would have taken us another 5 or 10 years happened in 6 months. We were asked to grab a chair in the boardroom and to go sit at the big table and to talk about risk and to talk about our suppliers and business continuity and all of that good stuff. That's never going to go away. That will always require people to marry up supply chain with business, with strategy, with future, with potentially opportunities to capitalize competitive advantage. That's, I think, where procurement is going. And I think that was already happening, and some industries were more advanced and some practitioners, and there's some incredible practitioners out there that are very forward thinking. But I think that that's where the profession is going. And I think that the technology is going to actually allow us to unlock all those levers that I just referred to.
Yeah, I love that. I totally agree with you. There is something that you mentioned there that I find super interesting, especially when it comes to benchmarking and benchmarking at scale. So when we think about the data that these large P2P platforms have to be able to benchmark services and products, it presents us with massive opportunity. The problem that I see when this happens is how to effectively do that, especially when a lot of the data that may be being input is long text data. And so now you don't have any kind of standardized nomenclature that exists across the board. And so one of the ways that a lot of companies are trying to deal with this now is the implementation of UNSPSC codes and making sure that there's that. Sorry, for the listeners, it's the United Nations Standard Products and Services Codes. It's basically these codes that are supposed to be universal in use to help benchmark and essentially for good data. And so what ends up happening is if you don't have any kind of standardized codes, obviously, if you're a data nerd, you get this already, but your data just becomes unmanageable. At scale, when you guys are thinking of being able to benchmark, are you implementing things like the UNSPSC codes? Like, where are you guys at with that?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, it's the old saying, right? Garbage in, garbage out. So if you and now try to do that for $2 trillion worth of spend in our case, right, across 5 million suppliers plus across like close to now at like 2,000 customers across the globe, that's a lot of data. And if you don't have some kind of way to aggregate that, and it's all anonymized data, I do want to clarify that obviously this is all anonymized data. But yeah, we do have like a UNSPSC type of taxonomy. We are tweaking that and we're trying to more form that into like a Coupa taxonomy, because for those practitioners out there that have been using UNSPSC, we know that it's not always helpful, UNSPSC. It kind of gives you direction, but I'm more a fan of like having taxonomies that are more meaningful, you know, because then you get into conversations like, well, what if I buy something from Microsoft? You know, I could buy hardware and software, and how do I ensure that it has the right UNSPSC classification there as a random example? So anyway, my point being, 100% agree, having some sort of unified taxonomy across our platform is critical. I mean, there's a lot of smart people that are way smarter than me, for sure, that are actually in that work at our company today. But it's critical, 100%.
And this is a thing that I think that really a lot of companies miss the boat on as well. Whenever they implement a P2P system, implementing the taxonomy that makes the most sense, not only for them, but also for benchmarking purposes, I think is so, so critical, because what ends up happening is if you implement like a homegrown taxonomy that really only makes sense to your organization, what you're essentially doing is you're limiting yourself for future benchmarking opportunities.
Yeah, that's kind of like right in the wheelhouse of the company I work for, and I have the pleasure and, you know, to represent them, but not to turn this into a sales pitch, because that's not really the intent of this conversation. But that is 100% accurate. I think what's important is that you need to think about like, how do these platforms, what were the founding principles of whatever technology partner you pick these days? And where did they come from? What's the architecture? I mean, it gets to that level that you really need to understand. And then you, to your point, platforms that are built based on best practice, in my opinion, yeah, That's another maybe thing that you just referred to. We just said there are three things that you need to think about, but think about it from a best practices standpoint. Procurement, as I said from the start, and I've said this for many years, and I've talked about this publicly for many years as well. Procurement is a trick, and I can teach that to anybody. It's transferable. Even if you have no experience in procurement, I can teach it to anybody in a couple of weeks. It's not rocket science. It becomes rocket science when we either turn it into rocket science, but it's best practice. And why I mentioned that is platforms that force you almost, and maybe forcing is not the right way to kind of make this.
Let's say guide you.
Guide you is a better word. Thank you, Mark. I knew you were going to correct me at some point. You can't help it, and which is totally cool. But now to guide you and to encourage you to apply best practices, because what it does is it allows you to benchmark. It allows you to get better and better and better. And platforms that are not like that, and you can still configure and you can still tweak and make it fit into your business processes that are flawed, that are old school, that are not best practice, you're going to not extract the value that you can out of a platform that is best practice built, is built on feedback from its community, and is leading you down the path of extracting the most amount of value out of the spend that drives through the platform. And I think that is a really critical point. And that's why a lot of these implementations don't go well. I read an article the other day, I think that 30% of digitizations are successful, or
it was a higher number than I thought it was going to be.
But it still, that means 70% is not.
Right.
You know, let's assume it's 30. I thought it was 30. And the reason why is automating a flawed process is not going to solve your problems.
Right? Yeah, the process is still flawed.
It's going to make it worse. So anyway, I maybe dwelled on that a little bit, but really important, best practices. And I have selected platforms in my past because they are best practice and it would make my change management maybe a little more painful, but the outcome is so much bigger and so much better than having to tweak one, spend a ton of money on consulting, which I honestly don't like, unless I have to, right? Anyway, I'll stop, but best practice is a really important point.
Yeah, very well said. And I think a lot of people think that the technology is going to solve all of their problems if they implement it, but if they have bad process to begin with, and then they adapt the technology to their bad processes, it's just going to make that situation worse than when it started, because now they're doing it faster.
You're back to the old ERP days. And for those of us who've been long enough to know, you know, where you implemented, you know, an SAP, and you have 75 change requests and a budget that you talk with like 5 million.
And then you end up spending millions of dollars in consulting fees to get,
We all have examples of those.
I'm for sure getting nightmares tonight, bringing back memories. Well, listen, my friend, as we close off here, I want to just pause for a second and ask you, if you were going to leave procurement leaders today with one piece of advice when it comes to implementing a P2P system or any piece of technology for procurement, whatever it might be, even if it's best in class for whatever it is they're looking for, what's the one piece of advice that you want to leave them today?
I'd say what I said earlier, make sure that you have engagement from your stakeholders. I mean, I can't stress that enough, and it sounds so easy, but it's going to get sensitive. It's going to get contentious. People are going to challenge, but one, make sure you have that, but also step up, man. Like, this is our time. There has never been a better time to be in procurement. There has never been a better time to do what we do. We are uniquely qualified and uniquely positioned to drive our companies forward. Digitization is a part of that, but we have to elevate our profession. And that's all of us together, including myself. And the only way to do that is by constantly doing things like these, Mark, and all the great work that you guys do. Throw out podcasts, learn from each other. This is just my perspective. I hope it resonates with the audience, and I hope that it triggers more conversation, because I legitimately believe it's procurement's time to lead. Now is our time. Digitization is there. But the fundamental thing is always, it starts with partnership. And that's what I want to leave your audience with.
Yeah, love it, man. Fantastic. If people want to reach out to you online and find you online, how do they do that?
You know, LinkedIn is probably the easiest way. Just look me up on LinkedIn.
Can you spell your name for everyone? Because I think everyone gets your last name wrong.
Sure. My first name, Michael. I say like Jordan, but not as good at basketball. And then my last name is V-A-N. And then there's a space, and then it's K-E-U-L-E-N. You can also go, of course, to the Coupa website, and I'll be on there as well. And you can find my name there as well.
Michael, you're a machine, man. Thank you so much for being on the show. Thank you for sharing your wisdom today. For the listeners, just so that you know, I will link out to all of Michael's social profiles and resources in the show notes. Again, Michael, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me, Mark. It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Hey, friends, thanks so much for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please share it with friends and colleagues so that they can benefit from it as well. If you find Negotiations Ninja Podcast worthy, please go on to iTunes and give us a cool rating with a nice review. We certainly appreciate every single one that we get because it helps us to understand who is listening, how they're listening, and what it is they like. If there's something that you would like me to discuss around negotiation, influence, or persuasion, give me a shout. You know how to reach me on social media, or you can get me on my website, which is www.negotiations.ninja.